This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Supercomputing with a social conscience.
And the 1G genome.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for January 13th, 2012. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. What do we got up today?
Well, we've got a couple of interesting stories, sort of out of the norm here. The first one that caught my attention was about a new volunteer grid. Now, we've heard a lot about these volunteer sort of supercomputing grids like SETI at Home, which was basically the first one, and then had a lot of follow-ons folding at home. There's a lot of them now. There's like 20 out there right now.
Yeah, I remember a while ago you and I reported on one out of Stanford, I think it was, that was doing genomics or protein folding that was a GPU-accelerated one.
Right, that might have been folding at home. There's a lot of them that actually do protein folding and genomics. That's a good application for sort of these loosely coupled volunteer networks, basically a bunch of PCs that people donate their time to, and applications that can sort of split all their parallelization across these loosely coupled systems work very well with these volunteer networks. And
in fact, some of these applications really go beyond parallelism. The idea with something like a sequence matching application, or looking for aliens out of a segment of the night sky, or even something like finding the next largest prime number, that it's not just that the workflow can be parallelized over multiple processors, it's that you can give individual PCs their own targets to look at, and those targets can be entirely separate. And my computer can be testing whether this prime number will divide, this known prime will divide into that unknown, and yours can be checking another one, and we can just worry about it later.
Exactly right. And this whole volunteer grid sort of trend was really enabled by sort of the invention of Boink, this Berkeley middleware that makes it really easy for people to set these grids up. And SETI, basically, I think, was the first Boink platform. The original SETI at home was on so this customized middleware, and then they sort of got with this open source Boink, and that became the platform.
Right. Give us this Boink again here, right? This is Berkeley Open Infrastructure for Network Computing,
yeah,
right?
That's Boink. That's what it stands for. Everybody calls it Boink now. But yeah, it's this open source project they started up, and it's really made these volunteer grids, you know, very easy to set up and very popular. And there's like 20 out there now. There's another like 40 that are in development. And the one we're going to talk about today is Charity Engine. It's also using Boink, and it's one of these nonprofit grids, but it's a little bit different in the sense that they're very sort of socially oriented towards charities. In fact, they give away they basically gather money from clients. They charge a certain amount, and half the money is given away to charities. And they've got, you know, some big name charities on board with this, like Amnesty International, Doctors Without Borders, and about half a dozen others. And
right. So what you have now is kind of a clearinghouse for these charities. I could go to Charity Engine, sign up my PC, and choose from a list of charities that I want to donate my cycles to.
Actually, I'm not sure if you can actually choose the charities. I think the Charity Engine organization itself sort of distributes that money. And I don't know if there's any particular way it does that, but there's, you know, like I said, there's 8 or 10 of them. I'm not sure if you can actually target your charities. Now, on the donor side, there is some incentive for you, because even though half the money goes towards the charities, the other half goes towards prizes to people who have donated their PCs. So if you've donated your PC, you know, you're automatically entered into a drawing like once a month or every certain amount of time, and you can get as much as like $10,000 if you're chosen. So there's a little bit of incentive there.
Taking the mercenary approach to profitable charitability.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of this good this good mix of sort of ethics and greed, I guess you could say. But it's just starting up. It's in beta right now. They don't really have, I don't think they really have a client. They're working towards getting that. But they are going to charge to clients. They just have to get it up and running. But the amount of money, they're basically undercutting things like Amazon. They're from what the CEO told me, Mark McAndrew, it's about a penny per CPU hour they're going to be charging. Which is quite a bit less.
That's quite a bit less. That's, you know, I think back to the dollar per CPU hour that was sounded so cheap to everybody when Sun Microsystems was first offering it as part of their grid computing initiatives.
Right, I remember that. It was a dollar per hour. That seemed kind of expensive to me, and actually it turned out to be way too expensive. So, yeah.
Well, when they first announced it, it wasn't. But then by the time they were on their second year of flogging that price, the market had passed it by.
Right, and especially when you got vendors like Amazon coming in there shortly, and they were able to undercut that rather easily. And anybody with basically a scalable infrastructure would be able to do
right.
that.
Well, Amazon didn't happen until much later, but that's beyond the point of Charity Engine. In either any case, the penny per CPU hour is cheap by today's standards.
It definitely is. So they basically need volume to get that going. I'm not sure how many donors they have right now. People are signing up, but once they get that and they get the proper software stack in place, they'll be able to sell this to various clients who will be able to purchase this, and with the idea that the money they're paying for will go to one of these causes, these good causes. So it's sort of an interesting business model there, and they've gotten a little bit of press about it, but I thought I'd give it a little bit more because I thought it was one of the more compelling stories about how to build a volunteer grid out there.
Sure. And I'd be interested in more detail on what some of these applications are. I hadn't considered yet what the HPC need for CARE or Doctors Without Borders is. Presumably, they've got some.
Well, those are just the charities. Actually, they don't have any particular connection to the supercomputing applications. So those are just the charities the company or the firm has selected to support. And the only sort of interface the charities have is that they don't want to support sort of unethical applications that are out there. So there is sort of this idea that it could be any application, theoretically, with science or otherwise, any application that would be suitable for one of these volunteer grids that could be parallelized over all these PCs. But it could be anything. It could be more, you know, protein folding applications. It could be climate analysis simulations. It could be, you know, a variety of things we're seeing in the current set of grids, volunteer grids are out there. But it's going to be, in this case, you have to pay for the compute cycle. So we could see, you know, a number of different applications out there. It just has to be sort of ethically bound to do no harm and, you know, again, pay a penny per CPU hour.
Makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Well, we were talking about some of these scientific applications, Michael, and when we were discussing it, we were talking about some of the genomics applications. Meanwhile, you found another story about another milestone achievement on the genomics side.
Yeah, this part of the story is actually not HPC's traditional HPC. This is actually on the hardware side of genomics, but there's a couple of companies, and one in particular called Life Technologies, that have come up with new DNA sequencers that are much more efficient and much less expensive than the ones that came up before it. And the one at Life Technologies actually is claiming they can now support $1,000 genomes. In other words, sequence a whole human genome for $1,000, which has also always been sort of the holy grail of these sequencers, and was going to be the point where, you know, genomic sequencers would become ubiquitous for people. So supposedly they've got this machine. It's out there. They've unveiled it. It's not going to be, I think, available until the middle of this year, but it's in the pipeline right now.
$1,000 per genome is going to attract a lot of interest, but it's also going to generate a lot of data.
Right, and that's the other side of it. They don't talk about this, but these companies that produce sequencers in general, they don't do the analysis side, and that's really the tricky part, the expensive part, because it's very compute intensive, and there's really no one way to actually do genomic analysis. So there's all these different kinds of software applications you could run against these things once the sequences are done, and try and make sense out of what the sequences mean, whether it's, you know, susceptibility to diseases or if you're trying to find out a specific personalized drug for a certain disease treatment. That takes a lot more intelligence than actually just sequencing the the nucleotide bases. So that's the expensive part, and they don't really address that. But the $1,000 genomes will certainly make this data a lot more ubiquitous out there. There's going to be a lot more genomes that are going to be able to be sequenced and maybe create a demand for all that software on the HPC side to be able to analyze these DNA sequences.
Yeah, well, this is where we find that the whole big data phenomenon that a lot of people associate primarily with enterprise analytics really crosses into the traditional HPC realm with a lot of research analytics as well. I mean, these are absolutely big data problems that have a lot of commonality regardless of what the user type is. You've got a mountain of data that you can't compute fast enough within the applicable lifespan of the data. You've got data rotting before you're ever doing anything with it. This is a big area of big data research for us.
Yeah, it is, and it's very very much so in this space because we've talked about how much data there is, and genomics there's already too much data. Even without $1,000 genomes, there's actually too much data out there that have already been sequenced to analyze in all the different types of ways that scientists and researchers and clinicians want to do that. So the data sort of backing up, and you end up throwing away a lot of this data. And this, this advance that we're calling is actually going to make the problem a little worse, perhaps. But yeah, I mean, the big data is really a huge problem right now in genomics, and it's going to become bigger. But, it's sort of supply and demand. I think this will spur people to try and figure this out in different ways. I think eventually the software and the infrastructure will catch up to this and the expertise. But, we're right now there's sort of this disjunction between, the data side, the data production side, and the analytics side, and especially in this field.
Well, we're most of the way through our own data gathering for our big data study across multiple research panels. And one of the things I'm most excited about is to compare the big data needs or challenges from one group against another. And this research analytics area is big for high-performance computing right now.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about a lot on this show, and I'm seeing more and more of it. And it's going to be a big story this year and in the coming years ahead. There's just a lot of interesting data that's being collected, and there's a lot of interesting things to do with it. So I'm looking forward to that study and all the other news that's going to sort of revolve around this area in the coming year or two.
All right. Well, we'll keep watching it, Michael. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot.
And have a great weekend.
You too.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.